couple of things. Well, just one story, a story that you told, I don't know, at a Labor Day meeting a couple of years ago. I had the same experience probably about a month or 2 months before you had it. And I believe Alan was still over there at the time, or somebody was there I was wanting to check on, and I got on Yahoo and looked up Tula and found something I didn't want to find on there.
See?
And it's,
see?
These deals like Brian was telling you about, these filters that you can get are things that you should have if you have a computer in your home hooked up to the internet. The second thing, and I just bring this out, is at home when I have studies with women, whether it's a wife who happens to be at home during the day while her husband's working, or somebody who's divorced or whatever else, if I'm going to the house or even if I'm meeting them at the church building, I always have a sister with me when I go to that. But another thing that I think can be even maybe more of a good guideline as well for chat rooms and things like you were talking about, there are certain areas in Bakersfield that I will not go to by myself, that I always take a brother with me, because there are some dangerous areas of town where I have been, you know, that I've had studies with people. And I always have a brother with me when I go there. I will not go there by myself. And there are areas on the internet as well, and those chat rooms you were talking about that are open chat rooms are dangerous areas, just like dangerous areas of town are. And it's one of the reasons, if not for any other, that we need to be careful around those areas. But the question that I really wanted to get to, and I had done some studies on this and done a part of a sermon at Labor Day on this a couple of years ago, and it's not only with the internet, but it's with television and all of the other conveniences like that, is the amount of time that people spend with those things. Because if we are spending 2, 3, 4 hours a day doing something like that, that is time that we can be involved in the work of the Lord's church. And we are just setting that time aside. And one of the main things that I hear from people time and time again, when I try to get them involved and help them get involved in the work, is, you know, I just don't have time. And I heard one preacher say one time, well, no, that's not the truth. You don't make the time like people used to, or you spend your time doing other things. Can you comment, do you have any numbers on how much time that people spend on average, and just so people can see how much time they're taking away from other things in their lives that they should be doing?
I don't have exact statistics with me, but regarding television use, even for kids, it's up there 6 to 7 hours a day that children watch TV. If you consider that someone works to 5 o'clock at night, they have dinner over by 6:30, and they sit down and watch the evening news, they're putting in 5 hours of TV if they do nothing else. I'm afraid we've reached the point where we won't know what to do without those types of things in our homes, because television's been around since the 40s, and many people here have never known a home without a TV. And when I talk about my upbringing and say I didn't have a television till I was like in the sixth grade, people say, well, how old are you? You know, that type of a thing. It's just unheard of. So I think as preachers, we likely need to be looking into studies for families that just say, what would you do with an evening if you didn't have a TV? And introduce them to the world of conversation. Introduce them to the word of board games that can help increase vocabulary and are simple, fun things to do. That introduce them to family prayer. That introduce them to common reading and sharing of the scriptures. Because most people don't know where to start. I think they would warm up to the idea more if they had a clue of what to do. And so I think we can take the responsibility for that. The internet is addictive because there's always one more thing to look at. And you can try another search engine and you can find another 10 sites that address just the thing you're wanting to explore. And I have heard there of individuals sitting down at the internet, eating at their computer, and still being online when the sun comes up the next morning. And then they've got to stagger off to work. Now that's why I say that leads to defrauding one another in a marriage, because as soon as we take the attention that belongs to our family and we send it in another direction, we are removing our affection from them and the lines of communication stop. So I'm saying even sitting together watching TV is better than somebody going off to a private room and abandoning their family within their own house, spending all their time on the internet.
Fred, I just want to say while Fred's coming to the microphone that Greg is rapidly becoming my alter ego out here, but he told the Tula story, not me. I was not over there.
But I'll tell you what. Brian Elliott can stay at my house anytime now that he's confirmed that that can happen innocently, because it can.
Greg, that was a great presentation and very timely. What I would like to address, I guess I've got more of a comment than a question, is the generation gap that we have, and it causes a big problem because the older generation generally doesn't, a lot of times the parents, they generally don't know that much about the computer. And the younger generation, they've grown up on it, it's second nature. Anytime I need something taken care of on my computer, if I have a problem with it, I've got a couple of young men under 19 years old that can do it in a snap. So, and here I am wondering what they're doing. We as parents, we've been told that it takes a village to raise our children. I don't want the village raising mine, and neither do you. When it comes to television use, we monitor what they do. And you mentioned putting the computer in the family room or living room. There's something that the parent can do afterwards, too. You know, we usually don't sneak around and read our children's letters that they get unless we think it's necessary, because there's a certain degree of privacy. But with a computer, if you don't know much about a computer, maybe you need to learn just a little bit, because you can go in after your children have played on the internet, click on a menu item, and it'll pop down and it'll tell you everywhere they've been. And this isn't foolproof, because it can be removed. But we need, if we don't know how to do that as parents, we need to learn. Because then we'll know. When you click on one of those, you may be surprised at what they've been watching. And not that we expect that from our children, but I was a child once. So we need to learn a little bit about the computer ourselves if our children are into the computer.
I think that's a great point, and I would extend it also to the leaders of the congregations, because we've got people that have websites, and the leaders of the congregations where they attend have no idea what's on those sites. And I think we need to at least have somebody like Fred mentions, so we can say, hey, I want to look at some websites, help me with this. And then just put it in your schedule to do it on a regular basis and let them know you're looking. Because when you know your mama's watching you, you're going to behave. And in our congregations, we need to know that the leaders of the church have the right to look over our shoulder in these areas.
That was excellent. Thank you. If I understood you correctly, the chat room that, say, the young Christians are on is, in a way, like gathering together after services or somewhere and talking. And in that atmosphere, a lot of conversations can come up, a lot of spiritual discussion, biblical discussion. When does a biblical discussion between young ladies and young men become public speaking for a young lady? Can she give her view on a scripture that's being talked about in a chat session?
Well, that's a great question, and I don't know that this answer will stand all arrows from all directions. But when no one is in charge, then it's immediately incorrect. The only way that a study can be appropriate is if someone is in charge of that study to make sure it doesn't happen. So to me, when it goes from being friendly conversation, such as, are you going to the meeting next week, and it changes over into, what do you think this verse means? I think you have a study, and the rules of a private study need to apply. And I think we need to be very careful to ignore that. Now, as long, and see, that gets into how many individuals can there be and constitute a private study, even on the internet. I think you can get in a completely public situation immediately. I think it might be appropriate for someone in that study group who is the self-appointed answerer of questions to say, thanks for your question. I will write you a response tomorrow. What else do you want to chat about? But then again, there's the authority of the home to be considered. So this is one of those things, if you're going to advise someone else's child, remind them, show your parents what you're looking at. This is to the family, so that you're honoring all areas. I don't want any husband's wife to be dependent upon another husband for their spiritual knowledge. That's not biblical. So it has to be a shared thing. It has to be open, and it has to be done very, very carefully. I think a chat room could turn from innocent to wrong with one turn. And I think we have to be careful to guard against it.
Very good, Greg.
Thank you
very much. I do believe it's important to really talk about some of these situations where women can teach and can't teach, because it's always been a thing we've had to sort of define and think about and talk about together and discuss, and I think it's really profitable because people need to know what they can do and what they can't do. And I can certainly see, for instance, if a woman posts a message on a website that's accessible publicly, that becomes public teaching of the scriptures. And we don't have any examples of a woman publicly teaching. You know, we have examples of a woman privately teaching in the scriptures. We have examples of a woman privately teaching a man, privately teaching other women. We have an example of a woman privately teaching several men. And so I think we need to think carefully about this so everybody kind of understands where we're coming from scripturally on these ideas. And certainly sending an email back and forth between one individual and another individual is a private conversation.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So the critical area is that I would see would be a chat room, because at one end of the spectrum, you've got a website that's clearly public. Mm-hmm. And at the other end of the web, on the other end of the spectrum, you've got an email that's clearly private. Mm-hmm. And so the chat room seems to be the critical question, just like a Bible study in somebody's home. Right. And so do you, we've talked about this a lot before, you know, but do you believe that if you have a private gathering of Christians, that a woman can speak about the Bible?
Yes. Uh-huh. And practice that regularly, weekly, and often.
Right, sure. So somehow, for a woman or a young lady to be able to speak something about the Bible, the chat room has to maintain some privacy,
yeah.
Right? Some limitations to it.
Yes.
Right. So, because the difference in public and private is invitation, right? Who is invited to come? So a public chat room where anybody could just drop in and say, hi, how you doing, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, would be like a public gathering of the church, where you put an announcement out and anybody can come in, is welcome to come in. But a private chat room would be limited, right? So that you invite certain ones to participate in the chat room and they have the password to get in, so that it's a limited group of people. And that would be, wouldn't that be, check me if I'm wrong, wouldn't that be parallel to a private Bible study where you invite specific people to come?
I think that could pass the criteria very easily. Mm-hmm. So long as that were being appropriately led.
Right.
Okay. In other words, the parents of those people involved in the chat, let's say it was young people, the parents should know and give their blessing, or else it couldn't happen, or shouldn't happen, even though perfectly private, would still be wrong if the parents were to say, no, I don't want you involved in a Bible study where this person is telling you what they think about the scriptures.
Right.
So as long as the controls are in place, I think you're right with the chat room.
That is a different issue, though. What I'm trying to define is the issue of public and private, because the issue of control or leadership is another question.
Right? Yeah, and for example, we could have an address where I could say Tuesday night at 10, Raymond, you, I, and two other preachers need to sign on so we can discuss a biblical issue. That could happen. At the same time, you and Shelley could sign on with Roger and Judy and have a family talk and some Bible discussion. Now, that would still be a private discussion because no one else is invited, no one else will be invited, no one else can access that site. So that those types of things, I think, are perfectly fine.
Right.
But if Roger gets off and Shelley gets off, it's wrong.
Right, sure. Yeah. So you're saying that the issue is whether it's public or private, that it's by invitation or not by invitation. And then there's another issue involved that's simply a matter of wisdom and leadership, that there needs to be somebody leading the discussion, right? Good. Another question that came up, I think we need maybe to clarify a little bit, is young people having a chat room on some biblical subject. You said that there always has to be some sort of, the implication I got from what you said is there always has to be some sort of supervision by somebody older.
Yeah.
And you said that, I started thinking, whenever young people get together, they get together all the time having conversations about biblical things, and it's not a prerequisite that somebody older be there when they have these conversations. But maybe it would be just a matter of wisdom to, from time to time, invite an older person to review what they're talking about, or to ask for advice or something, just like they would if they were sitting around having a conversation about some biblical topic. Just because they're sitting around having a conversation about a biblical topic doesn't mean they have to have supervision in that moment. But they can, if they get stumped or if they have some question, they can address that question to somebody else that might have more knowledge about it.
I think you're right, Raymond. Now, for a good many years, we're not out there on the curb by the street where the young kids gather together visiting after church, but we know who they're with. Mm-hmm. So our young people don't realize it, but that is a very tightly controlled situation. Mm-hmm. Because on the way home, you've got all kinds of parents saying, who'd you visit with tonight? What'd you talk about tonight? And we know who our kids are with. Now, once our children mature and leave our homes, we then trust they have right judgment in those matters to do what's right. So what I don't want to see is parents thinking, oh, they're visiting with somebody I don't know that they've never heard of, and it's on the internet, so it's okay. Well, we wouldn't accept that any other place. So now I think our young kids are very great with their approach to biblical studies. The ones that I have talked to and heard talk to, they are absolutely open to any older member of the church, any older man or preacher, right, saying, I don't think this is quite right here, and you need to be careful with this. And I think they are exhibiting an excellent spirit in that matter. It would scare me to death if they didn't.
Personally, I'm thrilled.
Yeah,
I am absolutely thrilled by the fact that young people get together and talk about the Bible on the internet. That just thrills me. Mm-hmm. And another thing I wanted to ask you about is, well, let me say this one thing too, just to kind of raise this a little bit. There's still some areas that, honestly, that I'm not sure what to do about women teaching. It's like I put on my, I think it's a thing, to put on my car some, Jesus is Lord, or a child is not a choice, whatever. Because I'm out there driving so much. If my wife drives the car with that on, is she publicly proclaiming the gospel? That's a good question. I don't know, but I don't think so. I think there's something intrinsically raw and different between that and her getting up and teaching in public. So, or if I you know, if I'm out running, I wear a t-shirt with a message on it, you know, can my wife wear that t-shirt, or does she have to keep it underneath a coat, you know, and every, when she meets somebody, say, you want to read my t-shirt, you know, or something, I don't know. I don't know.
You're setting yourself up for a study topic, but go ahead.
Yeah. So I don't know what to do with some of these things anyway. I'm just raising them to say, you know.
We can tell that.
Yeah. One thing I'd like you to say a little bit more about, this is the last thing, is what exactly you mean by the illusion of intimacy. And you kept throwing that up there, and I think I agree with what you're saying, but I would like you to define more about why it is an illusion. You know, to me it seems that it's an illusion because you can't really know a person until you meet them, see them, and see the reactions on their face, and you're in their physical, social presence, because there's something hidden about them when you only hear a voice, when you only read words, right? You don't see the whole person. And I'm not talking about that the physical presence of the person should impress us or not impress us, but gestures, actions, conduct, those kinds of things you can only see in person. You can only detect hypocrisy when you see the person face to face. Otherwise, you'll never know whether there's hypocrisy there or not. So it's an illusion. You're only seeing part of the person.
This is a huge area. And what the internet contributes to is time that's spent together. In courtship, the amount of time that is spent together is directly proportionate to the stages of the relationship. That's why whenever I work with a young couple on how much time they're going to spend together, I'll have them just tell me how much time they spend with each other personally, how much time they spend on the phone, and the reason being, I want them to save this part of their relationship until they're married. So I get real nosy real quick. Now, on the internet, people can blow through this part of the relationship in a week because they have shared everything there is to share about themselves. I had this when I was little. I did this. This is my relationship with this person, or this is where I've been to school. And people think they have a close relationship in direct proportion to hours spent together. But on the internet, first of all, you don't know if you're being told the truth. That's why... You don't know if you're talking to a man or a woman. You don't know if you're talking to someone that's your age or older. And that's why we hear on the news all the time that people are taken advantage of and that young children are kidnapped and molested, is because there are deceivers out there. And this is just like carrying on a courtship, standing on one side of a wall that you can't see through. Now that's dumb. That's just dumber than dirt, as they say where I'm from. Now no one should even begin to think that a courtship can take place without the face-to-face getting to know. And it's those questions of who do you know, who knows you, that have to lend validity to that relationship before it can even start to be valid. Now, what you have going on, unfortunately, is individuals who share their strongest feelings, their darkest secrets, and their deepest desires, and then they think the other person deeply cares about them. Now, here's the way we work. When we know someone well enough to share our life, warts and all, we think kindly of them because they listen to that. We feel strongly towards them with emotional ties. It's real easy for that to develop into a relationship. That is only intended to be done over a very carefully guarded period of time. And when you rush through it on the internet, it can lead to wrong very quickly. And the person will be tempted to be deceptive, but even if someone is not deceptive, just the fact that it's an internet relationship alone means that it's an illusion of intimacy. because you cannot get to know someone well enough to have these kinds of feelings for them in a faceless relationship. It cannot be done. Anyone that says they have this relationship with someone over the internet, they're deceived. And that's what the psychologists of the world are working on, is how to help people that think they're there.
Greg, thank you for your talk. I just wanted to mention something about this posting messages on web pages. A couple of years ago, on one of our sites, there was a biblical discussion section on one of the pages, and to kind of scoot around these issues, they just posted the messages anonymously. And so, in all reality, you wouldn't know if it was a man or a woman posting the messages or not. And I personally objected to that approach. What would you think about that?
I think that's a pretty bad thing to happen. It would be like us setting a screen up in front of the pulpit and setting the microphone where you can't tell if the voice is from a man or a woman. And so nobody will be offended by it. I don't think that would be appropriate.
And I think that's often the case, though, on the internet, is that your identity is unknown in many parts that you go to. And because of that, there is no accountability at all. And a lot of times, the way people act on the internet isn't like they act in real life. I remember one time being in a chat room with another preacher, and the way he talked to people about the Bible in that chat room was, I totally objected to his method of approach and told him so later. And it embarrassed me. But you know, he had no one to be really accountable to. And so I would see that as a real danger, something to really consider.
In my job, I tell supervisors, never say anything to an employee that you don't want to see in foot-high letters in front of a jury. So we have some pretty careful supervisors. And I would say that to people on a chat room. Don't you put a message there that you don't want to see in foot-high letters in front of your congregation. You'd be an embarrassment to the congregation. Discipline should and must result.
Yeah. Another thing, too, about the authoritativeness of an internet site. In doing research that I do at the university, sometimes for a paper or something, in a scholarly journal, you will never see an internet site noted as a source. At least I haven't yet. They may not happen yet in the future. But that's because the information is not really reliable in a lot of those. And, you know, that's really been a problem in some of the debates we've had recently. For example, about Bible translations, there's a ton of internet sites about that. And we read it and think that stuff's authoritative and right. Well, it may not be. It may not be any better than a book we read that the guy doesn't know anything about it either. And so just because it's on there doesn't mean it's right. And really, most of the time, the internet stuff isn't seen as being real scholarly. They're real reputable anyway, where I've been. So
one of the latest things I read about was medical sites that are just everywhere on the internet, and somebody was doing a review of how dangerous that can be, and how what wrong assumptions you can have if you get some of those sites. But it looks good, you know.
Just a word of warning about chatting. There was a letter in the paper recently where a lady's husband had been spending a lot of time on the internet. She began to check and found out he had been chatting with some mystery woman. So it went on and to the point and progressed to the point where he was wanting to meet this mystery woman. Her problem was she wanted to know what should she do because she was the mystery woman.
I was sharing what I was about to do in this presentation with a fellow at work, and he said, well, I'll give you an internet story. He said, both neighbors on either side of his house, he says, I don't yet have the internet in my home. And he's a worldly man. It's not because he'd be offended by anything he saw there. But he said, on either side of his house, the lady got started trading in Beanie Babies, started going to these conventions, only it wasn't a convention she was going to. It was a man she'd met trading Beanie Babies. The guy on the other side is losing his wife over the same issue. In the workplace, I've seen people that have moved from coast to coast to start a new life, a new marriage. This is all over in this type of thing. And wouldn't that be embarrassing as that individual?
I wanted to add some things. Then I have GB and I have Thad. And then I'll get some more in a minute. I wanted to say a little more about what Raymond was talking about and about when a woman can cannot speak on the internet. First of all, I thought Raymond made a very good point. Email is okay, but it's an exchange between two people.
Yeah.
A website is not okay, period, because it's public. A chat room is iffy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think it's worthy of note, not only that it doesn't need to be a private study, it needs to be individually initiated. That's certainly part of it, which means the public is not invited to it. But now, Paul used an even more limited term than just private when he was describing the two kinds of teaching. He said publicly and from house to house. And house to house teaching, or private teaching on the level of house to house teaching, is a smaller group of people than private might otherwise be considered to be. As a practical note, from my own experience in holding studies for all these years, and I'm sure most of you who've held them will agree, if you're holding a Bible study with more than six or seven people, it is very difficult, if not impossible, to maintain all the variables that are there and do anything about any problem in the study. Now, that's not an absolute rule, but I was interested to note in a book on small group discussion having nothing to do with the Bible, that out in the world they think the same thing. From 6 to 12 you can have a small group discussion, closer to 6 is better. Closer to 12 you get, the more formalized it has to become, because there's too many variables to deal with. And I don't know that those are regulation numbers or anything like that, but from a practical level it makes sense. I think a rule of thumb that needs to be applied here is, when Christian women or when young ladies whose fathers and mothers are checking this out think that it is approaching the level where it's moving from private to public, they better stop it, because whatever line you put, the edge of the envelope is going to be pushed. And this is something I think that is a dangerous problem. And we need to be careful about it, because it's another form of communication that we've never thought of before. But I just wanted to put that in there.
Yeah.
Greg, something that I'm kind of trying to work through as a father here, two of my children, Thad and Candace, would like to have email addresses. And at this point, I'm not willing yet to let them have an individual email address. We have one email address in our house, and that's one that Sarah uses and I use and Thad uses at this point, because we want to make it transparent. I don't mind them seeing what I write. I want them to understand that I'm able to see what they write, and that we should write nothing that can't be seen by someone else. Do you have any guidance for any of that? Because my children are getting older. What's your guidance?
I think as long as your children are under your roof, submissive to your parenting, there should be a complete openness in this type of communication because of the danger involved. Now, children would say, that's like opening my diary, Daddy shouldn't do that. No, I'm saying it's like opening mail, where you run up a bill somewhere. I need to look at it to see what's going on. I think it depends on the child and the maturity of the child. Even if they have their own site, it doesn't mean they have to have the password to access that site. So there are some compromises you can work out along the way. Yeah, it's their site, but mom or dad has to be over there to enter the password before they can get into it. So you can give some freedoms in ways like that if you choose to. But like you say, there shouldn't be anything hidden on that. And if you want to share one site or somehow protect their own personal sites, I think that's up to you and the maturity of the child involved.
Incidentally, too, also, by way of reference, just for everyone's information, wherever you go on the internet, that's not private. That's public. And by way of illustration, at work we have, through the agency that I'm associated with, we have our website, and particularly for our program, we have a website there. I have access through special password and codes to some statistical information on that site, where I can go on there and I can see who has accessed that website from different places around the world. Now, some of it, by the nature of it, I can see individually who the people are. Some of it, I just see the general area, the domain they come from. And I was in a meeting a month or so ago with some people that do our 800 number, Consumer Information Center there. Several people there and some people from my very office. And I said, now, by looking at our statistics on our website, I said, I can tell that you access our website a lot, pointed at one person there, because access it for information that we have there. I said, you use it a lot. You use it a little bit. I told my secretary, I said, you don't use it any hardly. And people's eyes got real big. And I didn't say that to put anybody on the spot. I said it because I want them to understand that wherever they go, it is not anonymous.
It is not hidden.
And I think that's something we all need to understand.
That's very good.
Okay. Earlier this week, this is just kind of a little story to tell the young people a little thing. Earlier this week, I was browsing on the internet, just kind of looking at some things that I had parental consent about. I think that's the right
word. Your parents, thank you.
And we had this little program thing. See, often I'll chat with my uncle, but that, you know, it's just me and my uncle. And we haven't heard from him in months, because his phone line has been disconnected. And we have this little billboard thing that kind of just tells you whenever somebody's sending a message. And I was just on the internet, and it starts telling me, you know, there's a message. So I thought, hey, it's my uncle. I haven't heard from him in a while, so I go there, and somebody's on there, just, you know, say hi. I said, hi, this person won't reveal themselves. And so I'm thinking it's just my uncle just playing around. And eventually he tells me that he goes to to Del Oro High School, and he's a junior. I just don't know what to do. So I just, dad, just yell for him. He comes in there and he tells this guy, you know, he says, we don't talk to people we don't know over the internet. And he answered with some words that I'm not going to mention. Mm-hmm. And pretty much what I'm just saying is, anybody, all you young people, just be careful, because I don't know what would happen if I hadn't called my dad. I'd probably, anything could have happened to me. But that's pretty much all I just have to say.
Thanks, Thad. Yeah, the instant messaging feature is one of those things. The other day, Paul Tate sent me a message, and I didn't recognize his screen name. So my first question to him and to anybody else that I don't recognize is, who are you? And I could have figured it out had I looked a little bit, because Paul's was very, very, very easily discovered there. But you know, if somebody won't say in that, I just turn it off and go on. And there have been people that by mistake have signed, given me an instant message and thought I was someone that I'm not. And don't play those games, because people are looking for people to prey on in those areas.